welcome to the FinTech Scaling Show. This podcast is sponsored by Scale Up Consulting, helping FinTech startups create a scalable organization to support an ever-increasing demand. When you're ready to grow, reach out to us at richard@scaleupconsulting.co. Now, over to the show with Richard Doty, founder and host. Hey, what's up, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the FinTech Scaling Show, where we talk to evangelists, founders, and executives, and we get their insights as to not only how they're scaling up their business, but also scaling up their lives in the process. And today, super excited, really excited to have Tim on the show. Tim is the co-founder and CEO of Live Sciences, and his superpower, which is most probably a very important superpower to have in the world that he lives in, is making certain that he's concise and to the point. And awesome to have you on the show today, mate. Welcome.
Thanks a lot, Richard. And I'll try to be concise and to the point as well today in the show then, I guess.
Brilliant. Well, you know, we got to have a discussion, so let's kick it off. And just to give everyone a bit of information about the show today, what we're going to be doing is we're going to be looking at how to create an organizational structure that will support your growth. And Tim has very specific expertise in this, so super excited to get underway. And I think, you know, maybe before we jump into the actual sort of meat of the show, it'd be good for folk to understand more broadly, when you walk into a company, what are the three things, you know, two or three things that you look at or you ask in order to assess the structure and the capability of that company?
I think back in the days before COVID-19, when we had this thing that was called face-to-face meetings and so on, it was actually a bit easier because you would just walk in these company offices and usually had some like fancy value statements on the wall, right?
Yeah.
And just talking to the receptionist, you will already figure out, is that actually the case or is it just some nice sentences on the wall? So obviously that part's missing now. So I guess I'm still trying to do the same in a way. And, you know, it's like, what are your company values actually? What's the three things that you have on your whatever wall that you don't have probably at home? But anyway, and what happens is, so either people know by heart and they're passionate about it and you almost have a conversation about that, or they're struggling to remember two out of the three. And then you already know, you know, but it's nice to have some values defined somewhere in some Word document or PowerPoint slides. But actually, if people can't remember it, then it's probably worth nothing. And that's already a pretty good assessment of where you are from an organizational structure perspective.
Yeah. I like that. And values, that's an interesting one. And I guess maybe what drives values? I mean, what I believe is purpose. Your purpose will drive the values that you create as an organization, as a company, as a founder, as an executive. If you have a strong purpose, then the values you live by are just, you know, actually become pretty easy, right? What do you think?
Totally. I think there's one other thing which is important, and many people struggle with that distinction. There's vision and there's purpose.
Yeah.
And not many people know what the difference actually is. And then the easiest way to explain, I find at least, is vision is something in the future, you know, that future state that we want to get to some point in time. And then there's purpose. And that's the impact you're having today with your product, your services, whatever you have. And already that difference is helpful, of course. And then indeed, I mean, if you know what the impact is you're having today for your clients, for your stakeholders, for your shareholders maybe as well, then it's relatively straightforward. What are the values that are important to support us in making that purpose happen?
Yeah, yeah. And then because you have a purpose, you have values. And how do you, if your values and your purpose are sort of out of sync when you first enter a company, what do you do to make certain that these two big topics are actually put on the table, discussed, and then not only discussed, but actioned and executed so that, again, there's a bit of blood running through the veins rather than just an empty skeleton?
Yeah, I think the interesting thing I find, purpose and values are usually relatively well aligned. So people seem to have understood how that works in a sense. Yeah. I think where the misalignment happens is if you look at leadership behaviors, if you look at the behaviors of a founder of a startup, right? And it's like all good ambition and probably good intent as well. And you're not role modeling, you're not developing the behaviors that you need to actually bring these purpose and value statements to life. And I think that's the big misalignment. I think it's actually the behavior of leadership, of founders, of also partially investors, honestly. So that's the side.
I mean, this leadership is a... I think you hit the nail on the head there, right? So, you know, I like to call it, in Scale-Up Consulting, we like to call it the LCR triangle. So leadership, communication, and relationships. If one of these components is out of sync, then you're going to feel it somewhere in your business. You might feel it from an investor point of view if you aren't able to communicate exactly what you should be doing. Or if your relationships are out of sync with your team, well, you're not going to be scaling up to the degree you want to scale up, right? So, and again, also leadership. If you're not able to lead authentically, these other elements, communication, relationships, are just going to fall along the wayside and you're going to start struggling and you don't want to be in that position, right?
Totally. I mean, usually people around you will be smart enough to figure that out within seconds, right? If you're not authentic and then you're just playing some kind of role, people will like immediately figure it out. And that's when the credibility is gone. And that's the number one thing. If you lost your credibility, it's going to be really, really tough path to gain that back, obviously.
Yeah. Credibility is an interesting one, right? Credibility is something that you work long and hard to do. So you need to make certain, we need to make certain that we are always consistently going out and getting the knowledge, the right knowledge to build up ourselves. Because, you know, we also have to build ourselves. It's not just about making a profitable business. Make a profitable business. I always say, what's the common denominator in business? It's people, right? Mm-hmm. So if you build up your knowledge, in a way, you're going to start building up that bottom line at some point in time, right? And then your credibility goes sort of, I don't want to say the hockey stick because that's a bit cliche, but can go like that if you take the time and effort and also the patience to do it.
Absolutely. And it also comes back to what we talked about before with the values. If you are not clear on your own values, like your inner value system, then obviously it's incredibly hard to build a company, to build an organization around your personal values, which if you do, will be obviously be relatively simple to be authentic because it's built around your own values, right? And I think that's still the part that's interesting for startups and then also scale-ups, obviously. Is one thing is, how can I authentically lead and kind of role model these values? The other thing is, how do I make sure it's not just me in the organization? Because that works up to a point of like 15, 20. If you're good, then probably 25, 30 people. But then again, you can't scale it further than that. So you need to be able to build a system, a structure around it. And that's then going a step further from role modeling. Yeah.
And how do we do this? I mean, there is a system, a structure. There's also people in that system and structure. It's not just tech we're talking about or fancy charters. As founders and executives, we wear multiple hats. But at a point in time, we need to take the hats off and give a hat to a new employee or a new team member. And what have you done or what do you do in order to identify which hats need to be worn by which people? And then also make certain that that person that's wearing that hat, let's call him the fireman, to sort of make it a bit more, paint a bit of a better picture. How do we make certain the fireman actually wears the fireman's hat? What are some of the tricks or strategies that you go around doing that?
I think the first thing is basically what you just said. Ask the people around you, ask yourself, what are the hats that I'm wearing? So move away from a job description, like I'm the CEO, I'm the CTO, I'm the whatever, right? That kind of job title doesn't help. Because first of all, if you ask five CTOs, they're all doing different things, of course. And two, it's a kind of a mixed bag of all sorts of different hats that you're wearing. So what we try and what we did for us as well, being 20 people now roughly, we switched to a role-based working setup, which means we document the hats that we are wearing. So instead of saying Tim is the CEO, that works for LinkedIn, but for the internal collaboration, we just don't have a CEO role. Yeah. We got a finance role, a legal role. We got an HR role. Yeah. We got, a role towards customers, business development, whatever. And I'm holding, six or seven roles right now, I think, which is true for any executive, really. Yeah. If you go out there, they're always wearing 5, 6, 8, 10 different hats at any point in time. Yeah. The thing is, we rarely document these. And the thing is, if you document, it becomes, first of all, much clearer for yourself, but also for the people around you. You can link it back to decision-making, for example, which gets you a lot of the speed that you need in the beginning. You don't always want to involve everyone on any decision, of course. And then the other thing that happens is, obviously, you can say, you know what? we just don't need that finance role anymore because we outsource the bookkeeping. So the only thing we do is maybe check back on whatever these guys send us, right? So let's just kill the finance role. You might still need your CFO for certain things, right? But now that we have broken it down into different heads, it's actually relatively straightforward. And we can say, you know what, the bookkeeping stuff is anyway. So let's just skip that one.
I like it. And in that document, let's call it the hat document, what type of information are you putting into that document that describes the role?
Always three elements. Number one, purpose of the role.
Yeah.
Because that also shapes the role. I'll give you an example. So for our finance role internally, the purpose of the finance role is something around making sure that the organization is as lean as possible and always has enough cash to play around with crazy things.
Love it.
So that's the purpose of the role. You could also have a purpose for the finance role, saying making sure that we are compliant, that the bookkeeping is properly done, and that we do year-end closure.
Yeah.
Right. But that's a completely different role.
Yeah.
So purpose of the role is the first thing. Second is the accountability is going with the role. Yeah. That's the obvious one. And the third one we have is what we call decision authority, because there are things where I'm like, well, that's a decision to be taken by the financial role, full stop. And we don't need to involve 20 other people on that one. It's just decision here.
I like it. And how does that then, if we take it one step further, when you're going out and maybe there's a document or a hat that isn't filled by someone right now, and you need to go out to the external market and you need to recruit someone, having that document in place and really understanding the purpose, the accountability, and also all the other stuff that's in there, how does that help you in really finding the right talent?
Exactly. So one part, it is helpful because we're much clearer on what we're actually looking for, because you don't have that fluffy job title. You actually know what you're up to. So that's the advantage. Now, the disadvantage is try to put a job posting on LinkedIn. I mean, you don't really have a job title, first of all, right? And then you need to put a job title. And then it's not that typical things that you would search for. And the other thing is, if we put something out there, it's like, I know, we look somebody who's able to help us drive the business development, for example. Mm. But business development would probably be like maybe 50% of the role, and then there's five other roles that you're having. So that's incredibly hard for like typical job posting type of formats. But once we are in conversations, it's actually really helpful because they
get I was going to say the in conversation would be quite powerful, right? Because you guys are very clear as to what you actually want, what the outcome is of that particular role, and whether this individual that's sitting in front of you can perform that. And you have to obviously go through an assessment. And what does that assessment look like? I mean, is it a one-on-one interview? Is it a bit more than that?
Yeah, so with our company being self-organized, which means we obviously got decentralized decision-making, there is one thing that we said, recruiting decisions are never single decisions, because it's just having too much of an impact. So we got a little panel of three people who's interviewing whoever. And what we look at is, one is, what's your individual purpose? And do you actually know that? So that's an interesting conversation. It's not linked to skills in the first place, right? It's about, is that purpose a match or is it not? Because if not, then what's the point to explore your hard skills? There's really no point in that.
Yeah.
So anyway, purpose first, and then we'll have a chat about, you know, values and whatever gets us from the purpose there. And then the other conversation obviously is about hard skills. So what's the experience you have? What's the experience you can bring to the table? How is that helpful for what we are doing right now?
Yeah.
Or maybe what we want to do in the future as well, right? Yeah. So that's the typical stuff. But we'll start off purpose, values, and these kind of things.
And then you break it down from there, and then this person comes into the organization. I mean, how does from a self-organized company, how does the organizational charter, you know, maybe that's a bit of an ancient word, but I'll put it out there anyway, the organizational charter, how does that look? Is it hierarchical? Is it non-hierarchical? How do you fit the different hats into the charter?
Yeah. So if you say organizational charter, I think, so we've broken it down into a few different pieces in a way.
Yeah.
One is what you would probably call an org chart. And it is really kind of an org chart, just more on a role-based thing. So we document the heads, as I said. It's a bit more circular kind of structure, so little bubbles and circles and stuff. But that's the structure that we do have. There is not much hierarchy in there from a formal perspective.
Yeah.
But there is obviously hierarchy from experience, from these kind of things, because there are more junior people. There's people who are doing their job for a decade or more, right? There's kind of that natural informal hierarchy. So that's there from a structural perspective, not so much. And the other piece that we have is what we call our lifeline. It's kind of a values, how do we want to work together? How do we look at the world? That type of document is really about things like, what does transparency mean for us?
Yeah.
Because it's such a huge word, and probably if we too would define what transparency means for us, it's probably different, right?
Yeah.
So that stuff, how do we look at more traditional tools like KPIs, plans, objectives. And there is a good place for that also in a self-organized company. So we talk about that a little bit to put it into perspective. We talk about how do you resolve conflict in an organization where you can't escalate it to your boss. Mm-hmm. It's an important one to clarify. So that's the stuff that we have there. And it's just good to give certain direction because self-organization doesn't mean chaos, hopefully. Yeah. And it means you need a certain structure to guide us as well.
Yeah, I was going to ask, because we've got the hats, we've got the roles, we put them into this self-organized structure. And we know the outcomes, because you've already mentioned there's a purpose, there's an outcome for each individual role. How do you make certain as a founder or CEO, how do you make certain that each and every other department or individual, how do you make certain that there is productivity? So everyone is producing, whether it's on the ground production, i.e. with your clients, or whether it's internal production, i.e. getting new leads into the business as a business development function should do.
Yeah. So I think one is we are building structures so that you can be in control without controlling. I think that's an important one. Yeah. And I think a key aspect of it is the transparency. So instead of kind of manager Tim running behind Richard, making sure that he's finally getting his work done, it's just really, really transparent. So that means some point in time, if Richard's just sitting there drinking coffee, peer pressure will kick in. And that's actually much more powerful compared to I run behind 20 people and try to check on them. So that's one thing.
How does that work there? Just to sort of, I'm just trying to give it a bit of life for our listeners. Can you give us an example of how that has maybe worked in your company?
Maybe one example is that we are really transparent around our financials. So cash flow, profitability, you know, these kind of things.
Yeah.
And instead of running behind people and saying, by the way, Richard, you didn't bill enough hours this month. So maybe, you know, get going.
Yeah.
It's more like we make all of these numbers and KPIs really transparent. And what we also do is at least every half year, we'll have a little bit of a, whatever you call it, a financial training almost, right? So, so that people understand, well, what's the mechanics? What does cash flow has to do with the profitability, with my salary, with what I'm billing to the customer, whatever.
Yeah.
And with people understanding that, plus the numbers being transparent, I don't need to tell you to work a bit more to have another business development conversation because you will understand the KPIs. And since you're hopefully intrinsically motivated by the purpose, you would probably want to do something about it.
Yeah, it makes complete sense, right? And as you say, then all of a sudden you got purpose, values, the right person in the right job, and we're self-organizing, right?
Totally. And I mean, there's enough science and studies around that where it's like people are motivated per se.
Yeah.
It's just if you put them in a frustrating job box or some frustrating system, I will try to avoid it, of course, right?
It's interesting because I love it. People are motivated, and I think people are less motivated by money and profits. I mean, why do I say that? I'm sort of putting my neck out there. I've recently run a couple of surveys over the last 6 or 7 weeks. And in each and every one, I always ask the question, are you motivated next year by money, by profits?
Mm.
And that always, out of the four sort of potential answers, that comes last.
Mm.
So, okay, that's interesting because they're motivated by purpose. And they're motivated by improving, whether it's communication, leadership, or relationship skills. So I believe it's crucial to have, like you mentioned early on, that purpose discussion up front, because that's sort of what drives, again, that motivation to do stuff and do stuff to the high level of your ability, right?
Yeah. And if you think about when people start their companies, when they found a startup, I mean, rarely they will say, I just started because I want to get bloody rich. I mean, if that happens along the way, fine, right? But then again, it's always, I'm motivated by solving that problem that I'm really passionate about for whatever reason.
Yeah.
And that's always the starting point. And that's why startups are so, well, first of all, really performing well.
Yeah.
If you look at working times and, you know, these kind of things, always that. And it's because we are passionate about this problem that we want to solve and not because of whatever profit. So
yeah, exactly. And as we go around, we've built a hat, we've sort of set up, we have productive system in place. My assumption is that in all of this, there's a silver sort of bullet that runs through everything. There has to be blood in the veins, right? And that blood is one of communication. You mentioned already transparency. Transparency is a form of communication, right?
Yeah.
How do you in self-organized business, how do you go around and communicate and build relationships, both, I'm going to put you on the hook, both internally as a team of 20, but also externally as a company with clients and potential new prospects?
I mean, technically, it changed a lot the last 1.5 years. Right? Yeah. Switching to a virtual type of interaction mainly. Yeah. But I'm going to say it's still the same in a way of you need to be interested in people. If you're not interested in the other person, then just forget it. It will never work. And quite honestly, there's always something interesting about people and about their jobs and what they're doing in an organization. So that's true for our clients. That's true for ourselves. So no matter what any conversation I'm having, I learn something new.
Yeah.
And if you truly are interested in the people or the person that you're talking to, I think that's the number one thing in whatever communication you're having. And then obviously there's a few like tech questions around, well, before COVID-19, we obviously met face to face here and there, you know, we had coffee at Starbucks or whatever. And that's more or less not happening anymore. So obviously there's this whole thing around, well, virtual remote collaboration. Mm. There's a thing about asynchronously communicating and collaborating compared to we always did everything together in a room in a synchronous way, right? Yeah. There's all of these tech things with virtual whiteboards and I don't know what, you know, so that's obviously something that you, at least these days, probably need to get a head around as well.
But, you know, we're talking here, it's interesting. So we internally and externally, you need to be able to use all of these new media functions, new media, I'm going to call it apps or tools. Let's call it tools, new media tools. You know why? Because, okay, just because you are communicating to a potential prospect via a podcast like we do now or a YouTube channel doesn't mean that your employees or your team won't get benefit from it, right? So you may as well look at it as one. Use the tools that we are using right now in the digital age to really bolster communication internally and also take those learnings and that information and put it into an environment where others can also learn, right? Because you want to be able to not only get your customers or your prospects to buy your product or your service, but you also want to help them. That's the name of the game here. And helping doesn't always have to mean a dollar sign at the end of it. Helping can mean listening to a podcast with Tim and Rich, or you know, listening to a webinar with Tim explaining in depth as to how to self-organize, right? That is part of sort of the communication that sort of needs to get out there, right?
Yeah. And then there's one of my favorite books is a book by Adam Grant, and it's called Give and Take. And it's got some really interesting studies in there asking who are the most successful people in business? Is it the givers or the takers? And the interesting thing, so if you want to read the book, spoiler, just don't listen for the next minute. So spoiler, the answer is the least successful people in business are the givers. So the ones who unconditionally give. And the interesting thing, the most successful people in business are also the givers. Right. So as a taker, you might be successful short term because you just try to take benefit of whatever's happening around you. But then again, midterm, people will not buy it anymore. So it's just not credible. And again, it's not authentic probably. So anyway, the givers are the most and the least successful. And the thing there is, so the big difference is if you're not able or mature enough or whatever you want to call it to ask for help yourself from time to time, you'll just get exploited, basically. But if you unconditionally give and you're not afraid of, well, Rich, you know, I heard on the last podcast show, you actually got some interesting connection there. Can we maybe use that somehow? Then you'll be in this group of the most successful givers. And that's actually how I look at the world as well. I mean, I don't know if anything's coming up from all of these conversations that I'm having. But then again, first of all, it's fun. And it's always something interesting anyway. And maybe it's coming back, maybe not.
But I like what you're saying, the whole giving and receiving. And there's another book you should read. It's called, you might have heard about it. It's called They Ask, You Answer. Mm. Yeah. And it's brilliant, right? Because so many times, we go out and we assume things, right? Without actually asking the question. So as founders and executives, ask the question and then answer it. And your communication will be so much better, right? Off the back of it, both for your team and also for your audience and the public that you're serving.
Totally. I mean, that's the number one thing. If you're not asking, you can't get a positive answer, right? It's pretty simple. And the worst that can happen is, well, it's a no. Okay, fine. that's all right.
Exactly. And coming back to the organizational structure, I mean, we've got the hats, we've got the productivity, we've got our purpose, we've got our values aligned now. We've also got the right people in the role. And if we want to really go out to the market and find talents, we've actually got a document that lists out the purpose and also the details of that role. But as you're growing up and as you're moving into maybe stage two or stage three of growth, and that structure is starting to stretch, and you're thinking, okay, well, we need other parts and other components to this. I mean, what do you think founders and executives need to be thinking about in order to make that successful step up to scaling up and actually leaning into a structure rather than maybe falling into a structure?
Yeah, I mean, one of the main mistakes, obviously, just from my biased point of view, but Anyways, that as soon as you grow to whatever, 30, 40 people, you'll go back, kind of default to the typical structures, management layer, another management layer, another management layer, we got another business unit here, whatever.
Yeah.
And the thing is, it will first of all, it will kill your speed and probably also the flexibility that you had before, and probably will kill your innovation to a certain extent.
Yeah.
So what I believe is building self-organizing structures built on certain values, on a certain purpose, can actually scale relatively easily. And the whole thing they need to understand is, and that's nothing new, that's the same you do with pyramid hierarchical type of structures, is as soon as you get to a point of 20-25 people, you'll need two cells, two kind of whatever you call it, circles, teams. It's just too big to be one big thing. And actually, it's the same mechanism. You would introduce a team lead in a traditional sense, and in a self-organizing way, we'd introduce a new circle. And it's just run by the same rules, by the same authority and autonomy and everything. So kind of the process or the structure you have in place is a rule or maybe a real process where you say, as soon as it's 12 people, we'll split it into two cells. And if these two cells grow further, as soon as one cell reaches the 12, we'll split it into two again. So you get three. You know, so that's it's just that kind of cell.
So it's like metamorphosis in a way. Yeah. How do the cells, you're getting quite technical here. There we go. How do the cells communicate? How do they work together? Because I'm assuming that, well, you know, that we, although they two separate teams, two separate cells, they would have to have some sort of common purpose, some sort of common ground, and maybe leverage each other's knowledge and capabilities in some instances.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, it's not so much different from a traditional kind of setup. You need to have some coordinators, whatever you call it, links who communicate to each other, because otherwise you're probably not aligned enough. And there's always that balance of autonomy and alignment that you need to strike.
Yeah.
So alignment you create via, I think, communication mainly, right?
Yeah.
So you would have two team leads or links who are talking to each other. The big difference is compared to a traditional team lead or some kind of whatever business unit head is, the business unit head would be the single leader in that organization. So you do the salary, the performance management, the hiring people, the promoting people, communication to other areas, the leadership team strategy stuff, whatever.
Yeah.
An interesting thing in a role-based working is I still have that lead communication role.
Yeah, yeah.
But there's these other roles that I can just split off and say, you know what, Rich, you're just doing the comms part. I'm doing the hiring, and the other guy is actually doing the whole strategy work. And that's perfectly fine. And so you distribute the leadership in a way. And that's how it works, I think.
Okay. And as you distribute the leadership, if we were to, so you're going to have multiple cells now, maybe you have six or seven or eight cells. Are you thinking that there's six or seven or eight leaders within those cells who then all come up and talk about, maybe on a weekly basis or monthly basis, talk about the performance of each cell, and then at a point in time, obviously the performance of the actual company towards its purpose?
So I do think that you should have a look at the performance, because most likely you do have a for-profit business or something, right? So it does make sense. It could be different people though. So it could be you got six, seven communication links who just make sure that we're all aligned in the different cells.
Yeah.
And you got six, seven other people who are talking about the performance. Okay. Or coming back to the thing we discussed before, you can do it via transparent numbers and KPIs, right? So that's the other mechanism. You could say, you know, the alignment we need across all of our organization is we're actually running the teams or the cells by the same KPIs. And that gives us an indication if we're still aligned enough and we are still performing in a kind of going the same direction.
So to create an organization that supports growth, what we're saying here is we have to firstly have a great purpose. The people that are coming into the business have to be aligned to that purpose. Also, when we're creating hats for different people or different roles in the company, we have to be able to actually document those hats, include the purpose in those hats, and allow each and everyone to go off and drive towards their purpose, because that will, their purpose and their role, that will then allow us to achieve our greater purpose and also give us the autonomy to communicate across the organization. But as you start really branching out, it's no more this hierarchical structure that is required. Rather, we're going to create leaders, we're going to create new cells and leaders within those cells to drive those initiatives forward and those cells forward. And by doing that, you're going to be nimble, agile, and your growth is going to be most probably, you're going to be able to support your growth much quicker than the traditional way of looking at the commander and lead and following that certain structure, right?
Totally. I mean, if you look at startups, right, they're talking about, well, we need to be ready to scale and we need to have enough production capacity. We need to have a supply chain that's scaling. Yeah. What you actually need is you need to be able to scale your leadership.
And
that will not work if it's all dependent on you as a person, because you are not scalable, full stop, right? You can work longer hours to a certain extent, but you are not scalable as a person. So how do you scale leadership? Well, in theory, relatively simple. You make it distributed leadership. In practice, obviously, that's not that straightforward. But then again, if you invest a bit of this capability building and exposing people to these situations that usually only the executive team would discuss, you already scale leadership to a certain extent just by exposing them to these tough conversations. And then actually they understand the business a lot better. And with that, you're able to scale leadership relatively easier.
And we started off the conversation with me asking you what are the two or three things that you ask as you go into organizations to help them in this scaling environment. And then to end, well, before we get to the flash round, to wind it up, I'd like to ask you, as you go forward in your scaling journey, what's the two or three questions that you are asking yourself that make certain that this system that you put it in place actually continues to grow and is self-organized?
And one question that we continuously ask ourselves is that system, is that structure, that organizational charter that we're having, is that still serving us well? Yes or no? And if no, well, then obviously we need to work on it, right? Yeah. So that's one thing. The other thing I'm at least constantly asking myself is, how are we getting better in building that exposure, that capability that I was just talking about, so that everyone kind of is working on their leadership capabilities? So that's a constant question. And I don't know, I probably don't have the answer right now anyway, but you know, it's also constantly there anyway. And then probably the last one always is, do we have the right people on board, or are we missing anything there?
Yeah. Brilliant. Okay. And now we go into the flash round, which is a bit of fun at the end of our podcast. Flash round for everyone out there is I asked Tim three quick questions. They obviously are to do with business and life. And then Tim swivels around and takes the mic and asks me a question. I always say a question. But yeah, ask me a question. And then we sign off and we head into the sunset. So let's go. Here we go. Flash round. Drum roll. Yeah, there's no drums today, but hey, there we go. Okay, so here we go. First one, if you had a choice between living life or living business, what would you choose?
I think that is about work-life integration, and I try to do that every day.
Brilliant. What are the top, out of these four, leadership, communication, relationships, and profits, what would you focus on more as you move into the next stage of your growth?
I guess if people listen to the podcast, it's clearly leadership.
Yeah, there
we go. Because it will have an impact on all the other three anyway.
So. Yeah, 100%. And if you were to change one thing about yourself, what would that be?
Sometimes I wish I was a bit more patient, honestly, with certain things.
Patience is a good one. Right, brilliant. Okay, so now I'm going to hand you the mic and you can ask me a question.
One question I'm curious about, Rich, is so what was your favorite game when you were a child, and what does it have to do with what you're doing today?
My favorite game, okay, so sports. I am a sportsman, and you know, I played loads of sports when I was younger: cricket, golf, tennis, rugby, football, swimming, you name it, I did it. And I was, you know, pretty nifty at most of them. And what does it relate? How does it relate to what I do today? Well, I think, in a way, business and life is a game, right? And I treat it as such because you have your ups, your downs, you have your good moments, your not so great moments. But if you're able to sort of understand the game of life and business, then actually you're going to have fun, right? And that's what it's all about. It's all about living life to the best thing you can live to and having fun along the way and incorporating, like you, I think we're quite similar, incorporating as much of life in your business and much of business in life, and then you get a lot out of it. So, yeah.
Totally. Absolutely with you.
Cool, man. Okay, so as we sign off today's episode, how can folks out there get in touch with you if they want to get in touch with you?
In any kind of channel that makes sense, with email, LinkedIn, whatever. LinkedIn might be the easiest. There's also not too many Tims with two M's out there, so you'll probably find me in my last name's anyway, pretty unique. So I'm pretty sure you'll find me.
Cool. Then we'll leave your contact details in the show notes. And guys and girls out there, if you haven't subscribed to the channel, please go ahead and subscribe to it. We will have a plethora of great knowledge and information in there from Tim and others. It's at www.scaleupconsulting.co.uk/media. Go and subscribe now and you'll get this and other podcasts on a weekly basis. Also, as you're aware, I'm in the process of rolling out my new book. So if you are a executive or your founder and you're looking to take action, take real action that will impact your business and impact your life going forward into 2022 and beyond, then drop me a note at richard@scaleupconsulting.co and I'll put you onto the email list that's going out shortly, because keen to obviously get this free book into your hands. But yeah, listen, Tim, awesome to have you on the show today and looking forward to your continued success.
Thanks a lot, Richard. Pleasure to be here.